Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Api Asyatiha Dasahas Tapta Svakritaya Sucha Sanjivayan Nu No Gatrai Yatendro Vanam Amburai Abhyashatiha dasahas. Abhyashatiha dasahas. Tapta svakritaya sucha. Tapta svakritaya sucha. Sanjivayan nuno gatrai. Sanjivayan nuno gatrai Yatendro vanam ambudhai Yatendro vanam ambudhai Apyesyatiha dasahas Tapta svakritaya sucha Sanjivayan nuno gatrai Yatendro vanam ambudai Api Weather Eshati He will come Iha Here Dasaha Krishna, the descendant of Dasaha Tapta Who are tormented Svakritaya by his own doing Sucha with sorrow Sanjivayan bringing back to life Nu perhaps Na us Gatrai with the touch of his limbs Yata as Indra Lord Indra Varnam a forest Ambudai with clouds Translation Will that descendant of Dasaha return here and by the touch of his limbs bring back to life those who are now burning with the grief he himself has caused. Will he save us in that way, just as Lord Indra brings a forest back to life with his water-bearing clouds? Repeat. Will that descendant of Dasaha return here and by the touch of his limbs bring back to life those who are now burning with the grief he himself has caused. Will he save us in that way? Just as Lord Indra brings a forest back to life with his water-bearing clouds. Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jai. Om Abhyana Tamiram Dasha Gananjana Salakaya Chakshusha Manitam Jina Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. Jaya Gaura Bhakti Gana Gauriyana Prana Sabha Bhakti Mili Mori Bhakti Diyadana. All glories to all the devotees of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, for the Lord is their life and soul. All of you kindly bestow devotional service upon me. That's a verse by Haridas Thakur. We should say that every day, get the mercy of the devotees. So we're going to read, I'm going to comment briefly on this and then we're going to go to the other two slokas because there's a purport. In this particularly interesting is how the mention of the forest being brought back to life by Krishna, by the mercy of Krishna. We all know the Shikshastakam, Chetabhanamajanam, Maha Devagni, the big forest fire of material existence. That's the nature of the material world. It is so dry, very, very dry, and very hot. Hot with frustration and lust, and very dry with just dissatisfaction. Despite all of our endeavors, our big cities, our big plans, we're very, very dry. And you see this, particularly when you interact with people in their daily life. You see how they're very unsatisfied. Just last night I was walking up here in Dank Street, past the shops, and I overheard a man say, "Oh, this is the best time of the day." I think it was 6 o'clock. "That was the best time of the day." And then his friend said, "Oh, why?" He says, "Well, because I'm leaving soon." So it just drives home the point that these people, they're doing all these things, but they're not satisfied. They're performing all these different jobs, but they're doing them completely begrudgingly. They're not happy, but they feel that's what they have to do and there's no alternative and they just have to go through the austerity. And it's very unfortunate, but that is the nature of the material world. So this dryness is something which can be satiated only with Krishna consciousness or spiritual life. It's only possible. Just like Prabhupada gives the example of the fish out of water. It doesn't matter what you give the fish. It just wants to go back to the water. It wants to go back to its nature. It feels more comfortable. Despite all of our endeavors, we will not be comfortable in this material world. It's very, very dry. It reminds me of... it's a silly example, but it's a funny one. A party trick. I remember when I was younger, someone did this party trick and he said, "Oh, just see if you can do this. Eat these crackers. And, you know, 7 of these crackers and after that you have to whistle." So you think, "Oh, sure, I can do that." And he says, "I'll give you $100 if you can do that." So you eat these crackers and the crackers just dry your mouth up completely. Doesn't matter how hard you try, you cannot whistle. It's impossible because it completely dries your mouth. And that is the nature of the material world. We just get dried and withered. And when we get in touch with the spiritual waters of Krishna consciousness, we begin to grow again. We begin to come back to life again. Like a withered piece of grass, it comes back to life again. Gradually, gradually. It's a slow process. Just imagine how long we've been in this material world. Many, many lifetimes. And we forget that. We think, "Oh, you know, I've been in Krishna consciousness for so many years and it's not making much difference. I'm, you know, very small advancement." But we've been here for billions of years. So the small amount of time we've spent in the temple, in the ashram, is nothing on the time scale. You know, when you look at the big picture, it's nothing, absolutely nothing. We've been here for so, so long. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, his only desire was to give people this mercy, to wake them up of their dormant Krishna consciousness. And so the example here of Lord Indra brings the forest back to life with water-bearing clouds is so appropriate. It's so appropriate. Because that is the nature of the Sankirtan movement, giving mercy. Giving water. Right now, we can see this practically, even on a material level, how water is such a valuable asset. They say that in the future, the wars of the world will be fought over water. Not oil, water. Because water is becoming more and more scarce. It's actually a great and important resource. We often do not value how lucky we are just to have water so easily. We just turn on the tap and there's water. But there are places in the world where they can't turn on the tap and there's water. There's nothing. Places like in Africa, like Darfur, where the cracks in the ground are this wide because of drought. And of course now we're seeing in Victoria there's so many forest fires. So the ground is becoming drier and drier and drier. It'd be so nice to see a big downpour of rain. People would be so happy. So it is a great resource, water, and it's something which I've actually been meditating on just recently, the importance of water and how even on a personal level, it is so important to hydrate the body, to keep the body very hydrated. Most diseases in the world are caused because of dehydration. It's not because of, you know, this germ or that germ, but usually it's because of dehydration. Most people do not drink enough water. And if they're drinking water, they're usually drinking contaminated water. The water's full of chemicals and metals and so many things. Water is so important. So keeping the body healthy and in good condition so we can execute Krishna consciousness is very important because the body is a temple. And that's another thing sometimes we miss the point on. We come to Krishna consciousness, we think, oh, we just give up everything. We just surrender to Krishna. We don't have to worry even about the body. But no, the body is Krishna's property. It's not our property. It's Krishna's property. So we have to maintain it nicely so we can execute devotional service to the maximum level. So a general rule of thumb, and this is a little side point, but if every 25 kilograms that you weigh, you should drink at least a liter of water. So of course, when you drink water which is offered to Krishna, it's nourishing to the body and the soul. And that's the beauty of Krishna consciousness. Something which we normally do can be transformed. That's the nature of Krishna consciousness. That is the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That we're in this material world, we don't have to actually abandon anything. We just have to engage things, connect things back to Krishna. Atashri Krishna Namani Nabhavegraya Indriya Sevenmukhi Jivaro Swayameva Svarachada. The material senses are imperfect. They cannot understand Krishna. You cannot perceive God with these material senses. Impossible. You cannot see Him. You cannot hear Him. These senses are dull and ignorant. It's like we chant every morning when we take prasadam. Sarira vijajal jindriya taikal. This body is a lump of ignorance. And all the senses are a network of past death. Think about that. This body is a lump of ignorance. And the senses are so imperfect. So how do we perceive Krishna? We do not. Krishna reveals Himself to us. So Bhaktisiddhanta would say, do not act in such a way to see Krishna, act in such a way that Krishna sees you. So when we engage our senses in Krishna's service, offering the water we drink, offering the food that we drink, we purify the senses. Atashri Krishna Namadi Nabhave Griyam Indriya. When we engage these senses, beginning with the tongue, then the senses become transformed. Just like an iron rod when you put it in fire. These are the examples we've heard hundreds of times. But they're very, very powerful. They're very pertinent. We have to learn to engage our senses in Krishna's service. Let me read the next few verses and then we'll go to the purport. Text 45. Kasmat Krishna ihayati prapta raja hatahita Narendra kanya udvaya pritasava solidvrita. But why should Krishna come here? After winning a kingdom, killing his enemies and marrying the daughters of kings, he's satisfied there, surrounded by all his friends and well-wishers. Text 46. Kim asmarbi vanu korobir anyabir va mahatmana sri parte aptakamasya kriyetarta kritamana. The great soul Krishna is the lord of the goddess of fortune and he automatically achieves whatever he desires. How can we forest dwellers or any other woman fulfill his purpose when he is already fulfilled within himself? Purport. Although the gopis lamented that Krishna was associating with the city women in Mathura, they now realize that as the absolute personality of Godhead, he has no need for any woman. It is out of his causeless mercy that he awards his association to his loving devotees. It is out of his causeless mercy that he awards his association to his loving devotees. This is an important point to understand that our advancement in Krishna consciousness is dependent on Krishna's mercy, not by our physical efforts. It's by the mercy of Krishna coming through the Guru, coming through the Vaishnavas. Krishna is in the hand of the devotees. You want Krishna? You go to the devotees. Krishna is in his hands. Krishna is captured by his devotees. He's in their heart. So by the mercy of the Krishna, that's how we make advancements. So how do we get the mercy of Krishna? By the association of devotees. Ramananda Roy was speaking to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, very, very nice part of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And Mahaprabhu is asking him so many deep questions and pleading with him, please go more, tell me more, go deeper, go more, further, further, I want to know more. This is not enough, this is superficial, I want the deeper stuff. And one of the questions he asks is very significant, and I always remember it, and it's very, very significant. He said to Ramananda Roy, what is the most auspicious thing in this world? If I ask you, what is the most auspicious thing? And you may say, well, it's the chanting of Hare Krishna, it's seeing Radha Balava every morning, it's Srimad Bhagavatam, it's Vrindavan, Radha Kun, right? All correct answers. But Ramananda Roy said, the only auspicious thing is association with Krishna's devotees. The only auspicious thing. Everything else is inauspicious. The only auspicious thing. Why did he say that? Because that is the basis of everything. When you associate with Krishna's devotees, everything else follows. Automatically you get the association of the holy Dham. Automatically Bhagavatam will be there. Krishna Katha will be there. The holy name will be there. Prasadam will be there. Everything will follow. Where there's Krishna's devotees, it is a veritable holy place, walking holy place. This is the nature of the sadhu. So the only auspicious thing is the association of the devotees of the Lord. How do we get that? We have to serve the devotees. We have to serve them, make the devotees happy. One key to success in spiritual life, somehow or other, make the Vaishnavas happy. Make them think of you in positive ways and to pray for you. It's the key to success. If you have Vaishnavas praying for you, I guarantee you, you're going back. The ticket's already bought. It's a blessing. This is a blessing of Krishna. So somehow we have to get the blessings of Krishna. And somehow or other, we have to, as our responsibility within the Sankirtan movement, we have to give other people the blessings of Krishna. So therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was only interested in just giving the mercy. Mahavaranaya. No restriction. Most merciful. I remember when I first joined, young Bhakta, and a whole bunch of us joined, a whole bunch of my friends joined. It was like 8 of us from the same place. My best friend joined. He's like all school friends. We all joined, like 8 friends. My brother joined. My sister joined. My best friend joined. His mother joined. His sister joined. The girl around the corner joins, like all knew each other. We grew up together since we were 5 or 6. And I said one time, it was just like I'd been a devotee for a couple of weeks, and I thought, how is this possible? Why did we get such mercy? And he said to me, very profound, he says, because Lord Chaitanya starts at the bottom of the barrel. He starts at the bottom. That's where we got the mercy. I said, okay, that's fair enough. That sort of humbled me, you know. I realized I wasn't qualified. I didn't do any pious activities. It's just somehow or other I got the mercy and I took advantage of it. That's the key. Because we'll give people mercy. We'll give people an opportunity, but they don't always take it. The good fortune for us is that we took it. Someone told us and we said, yeah, that sounds good. Let me try that. And we went for it. And then the mercy kept flowing. That was our good fortune. Somehow or other we made the right decision at the right time. So then in this verse also, Krishna is described as the Lord of the Goddess of Fortune. The Lord of the Goddess of Fortune. So what does fortune mean? It means everything good. Right? Everything good. Not just money. Sometimes we think, oh, money, what's the money? Gold. No. Goddess of Fortune means everything good. Prosperity. Health, prosperity. Everything good. Krishna is the Lord of the Goddess of Fortune. So he has no need of anything. Everything's supplied to him automatically. He's the Lord. In a very famous letter, Prabhupada wrote to all the temple presidents in 1976, I believe, something had happened in one of the temples, and he was really disturbed. And it was to do with prasadam and hospitality, how people were, someone was not treated properly at the temple. Prabhupada wrote a letter to all the temple presidents, and he said, every temple must have at least 20 preparations available every day. Cooks are always cooking. Anyone comes, we can feed them. And if we run out, there's more. We cook more and we supply more. There's always food available. And then he goes on to say that Krishna is the husband of the goddess of fortune. Where is there want? Where is there a question of want when Krishna is the husband of the goddess of fortune? Right? Everything should be there. You worship Krishna, he supplies. And in the last line of that letter, he says, invite the whole world, we can feed them. That was his attitude. Invite the whole world. And I can see in Melbourne Temple, this is definitely a premier example of how prasadam has been distributed very nicely, nice hospitality, people feel they're welcomed, and definitely something which would be very satisfying to Srila Prabhupada. It's so important part of our culture, the idea of hospitality, greeting someone. This is actually a point which I bring up when I give lectures around the world. I go to vegetarian conferences and animal rights conferences and green conferences, and I give lectures on food for life, presentations about food for life, and about the culture of hospitality, the food culture. And one of the points I make is that this Food for Life program is based on a very ancient culture, the Vedic culture of hospitality. And the basis of that culture is the understanding that we're all spiritually equal, and therefore we should respect each other like spiritual equals. And the best way, the most practical way to express that respect is by sharing food, is by actually sitting someone down and sharing your food with them. So this is the basis of the Food for Life program. And in this way, I introduced some spiritual concepts within the Food for Life program. And this is something I was mentioning to Gopal Guru and Aniruddha, that the way I present Food for Life is not simply as a handout program to feeding poor people, but actually something that represents the entire Vedic food culture, which would include farming communities, environmental preservation, organic gardening, everything to do with that supports the food culture. Hospitality, of course, cleanliness, everything connected with it. The distribution of food is the end product, but it's not the complete picture. So I try to give people the complete picture, and that way I try to introduce people to a whole treasure house of culture, and not just isolate one little aspect of it and then miss out on a lot of people, because a lot of people don't understand that. They tend to, if you just present that we are feeding the poor, then they think, oh, it's just a humanitarian program. But it is much more than that. We are a spiritual movement. We want to transform society. We want to give people a positive alternative. So therefore we have to also live the example. It's not a matter of simply distributing books and telling people. We have to also be practical examples of the philosophy. So even in our daily lives, we should try to eat properly. We should live, you know, as natural and as pure as possible. We should, if possible, we should avoid even regular petroleum cars. We should use hybrids or electric cars. We should look for alternative energy sources, windmills, solar power. Why do we have to, which was supposed to be an alternative movement? Prabhupada, from the beginning of ISKCON, looking back at the history of ISKCON in 68, what did Prabhupada do in 68? Anyone remember? Something very significant. No, 66 was ISKCON. In 68, what did he do? He established New Vrindavan. Think about it. The movement's 2 years old. 2 years old, the movement, and Prabhupada sets a precedent. He establishes a 1,200-acre rural farming community. He's obviously giving us, you know, a message here. He wanted ISKCON to be based on a rural economy. He wanted it to be based on the farms to support the city projects. He wanted devotees to live naturally and independent of society. So this is the ideal, and somehow or other we have to work towards that. individually or collectively, we have to realize that that is ultimately how we should be living our life. Not simply serving the man and having a 9-to-5 job and just like everybody else. We should try it as much as possible to gradually purify our life, our whole lifestyle, so it becomes more to the mode of goodness. Because that is the basis of spiritual advancement, coming to that mode of goodness. As long as you're in ignorance, and you're affected by passion and ignorance, then it's very, very hard to transcend these modes of material nature. So, Krishna is the husband of the goddess of fortune. So, wherever there is Krishna, it's like in the Bhakti Godhead. Where there is, what is it? Where there is light, there is no nescience. Where there is Godhead, there is light. Where there is light, there is no nescience. Where there is Krishna, there is no ignorance. We have a responsibility that we've been given such a wonderful gift of Krishna consciousness. We have a responsibility as individuals and as a team of people, as a group, to give people mercy in the form of transcendental knowledge, in the form of prasadam, in the form of the holy name. These are the three angas of the Krishna consciousness movement. I remember when I first went to Russia, and I was back in 93, and I was establishing prasadam distribution programs throughout Russia, and I got a lot of challenges from the devotees there, because all they'd heard at that point was book distribution. And I came and I started talking about prasadam distribution. I said, what, prasadam distribution? We're supposed to distribute books. What's this about prasadam distribution? And because I had read all of Prabhupada's letters, I had access to all of Prabhupada's books. They only had maybe one or two books, so they hadn't read everything Prabhupada had said about prasadam distribution. And at that particular time, the emphasis was on book distribution. So they didn't really have a very balanced understanding of Krishna consciousness. And I got a lot of challenges from them. I remember one person stood up and says, oh, that's a very nice lecture about prasadam, but what about the real program, book distribution? And so I had to deal with that, but it was funny. But usually what I would do is I'd present that all of these programs are important, but obviously give a little bit of emphasis to prasadam distribution, because that was something which was needed then. So prasadam is a very effective way to give people mercy. Right? Every single one of us, at some point in time, got a huge realization, got a huge boost in our Krishna consciousness when we first took prasadam. Right? Without prasadam, there would not be a Hare Krishna movement. There would not be a Hare Krishna movement. Imagine if you isolated these three angas, Harinam, book distribution, and prasadam, and you isolated them. Say, for example, the Krishna consciousness movement was just book distribution. Right? No deities, no Harinam, just book distribution. Wouldn't that tend to be a little bit dry, right? People would think, oh, they're just dry philosophers. I don't want to join those people. That doesn't sound like much fun. And then imagine if it was just Harinam. No philosophy, no books, just Harinam, no prasadam. What would people tend to think? Sentimentalists, right? They're just partying all the time. Heck, that's not spiritual. They're just singing and dancing, there's no substance. Now imagine if we just did prasadam distribution and no books and no Harinam. What would they think? Oh, they're just sense gratifiers. They just eat all day, right? But when you put them all together, you have a perfect combination. They complement each other. So all of them are very, very important. And we should, all of our projects should be balanced, should be a balanced presentation of all these three. So my focus, and I feel my responsibility, my service to Prabhupada is to expand prasadam distribution. As in 1993, I was asked by Mukunda Maharaj to come to Washington, D.C. to establish the headquarters for Food for Life Global. So we did that, and our whole purpose was simply to serve the prasadam distributors, just to be a resource for them, to help them expand their program. Because we felt this is so important. The world is so much in need of prasadam right now. There's so much pain in the world. People are suffering so much. And this, and a very important point I want to make to you today, remember this point, is that you cannot make spiritual advancement unless you change your eating habits. Impossible. Prabhupada clearly said again and again, he says, meat eaters cannot understand God. So what does that mean? We distribute all these books. If someone is eating meat, they will not understand. It's only when they change their diet after reading those books, then the realizations come, they get purified, and they start making progress. Have you ever heard of any devotee joining the temple that's not a vegetarian? They first become a vegetarian. They change their eating habits, then they start to understand. Their senses become a little bit purified. They come to a level of goodness. They start to understand a few things. You have to change your eating habits. If we want people to take Krishna consciousness, if we want them to make spiritual advancement, we have to change their eating habits. How do we do that? We have to give them a higher taste. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, one gives up the lower taste by experiencing a higher taste. You know that verse? You've heard that one? Only by giving up experiencing a high taste can you give up the lower taste. So we have a responsibility to give people the opportunity for this higher taste. And therefore Prabhupada said in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, in the commentary on the story of Shivananda Shane and the dog. Everybody know that story? The dog got the mercy. Shivananda Shane was doing Harinam. I'll shorten the story. Doing Harinam, a dog came along wagging its tail and wanted to join the party. So, okay, come on, dog. And this happens sometimes in Vrindavan. You see dogs join the kirtan party. So Shivananda was a compassionate Vaishnava. He says, yes, dog can come along. So they're walking along doing Harinam on their way to Jagannath Puri. And Shivananda Shane was so compassionate that he actually arranged for two cooks to prepare boiled rice for the dog. So typically you would think, oh, the dog can just have the scraps. No, Shivananda Shane actually arranged for cooks to prepare rice for the dog, fresh rice. So the dog was getting really nice, it was being cared for very nicely. There was a point when they had to cross the river, the boatman says, no, I cannot take a dog. Shivananda Shane said, look, I'll give you extra money. They used shells in those days. They didn't have dollars like we have. He gave him extra shells. And the boatman says, okay, the dog can come. So in this way, he tried to accommodate the dog all throughout the journey, always being very compassionate. And at a certain point in time, the dog disappeared. Shivananda Shane nearly went mad in anxiety. He sent people looking for the dog. And they couldn't find the dog, and he was so distressed. Eventually, they came to Jagannath Puri. They saw Lord Chaitanya feeding the dog in the courtyard of the temple with coconut pulp, throwing it to the dog. The dog was catching it, and the dog was chanting Hare Krishna. He was saying, chant Hare Krishna. The dog would eat the prasadam, and Hare Krishna. However, a dog would say Hare Krishna. And Shivananda Sain saw this, and he was shocked. He immediately paid his dandavas. He thought, my God, I've been so offensive to this dog. This is a great Vaishnava. He was like so humbled by this sight. The dog's actually chanting Hare Krishna and getting direct mercy from Mahaprabhu. It's a fascinating story. So in the commentary to that verse, Prabhupada says, even a dog can go back to Godhead. Simply by prasadam and the holy name, even a dog can go back to Godhead. So he says, everyone should get a chance to take prasadam and thus be induced to chant the holy name. Everyone should get a chance to take prasadam. This is like my personal mission statement. I'm thinking, how can I give everyone an opportunity to take prasadam? So one of the ways I want to do that is to teach people about prasadam. If we just think that, okay, here's our society and we have to create all these programs in order to get the mercy out. That's one way, right? But why not take this knowledge, give it to people and train them up and expand the distribution of prasadam that way. So give them this knowledge of prasadam, this understanding of how you can transform food with positive consciousness by offering food to God. You can transform it. And in this way you can expand prasadam distribution. Very practical. So one of the lectures I give at these vegetarian conferences is all about prasadam. I tell them the whole idea of prasadam. Now one fascinating thing happened to me about a year ago. I got this book. This is amazing. This book is called The Hidden Messages Within Water. Anyone read that book? You have? It's a fascinating book. The Hidden Messages Within Water. Highly recommend you read it. Because it will actually confirm what we already have faith in. but it will confirm it. It's scientifically confirmed what we have strong faith in. That is, we all believe that prasadam can transform consciousness. We look at prasadam, we think, well, this is not ordinary food, right? We know it's special. We just intrinsically know this is special. Krishna's looked at it. It's special. It's mercy. So we eat the prasadam knowing that it's purifying our soul. But how do you prove that scientifically? You can tell someone, but, you know, sure, it looks like normal food to me. How do you prove that? So this Japanese scientist did some fascinating experiments on water. And he took water and exposed it to different vibrations. Positive vibrations and negative vibrations. So he exposed it to, like, you know, prayer. He exposed it to, like, music, which was very uplifting. He also exposed other water to, like, rock and roll music, very, you know, mode of ignorance music. He also exposed the water to just positive expressions like, I love you, I love you, I love you. And then another glass of water he exposed it to, you know, I hate you, I hate you, I hate you, like that negative energy. And what he found is when he froze the water and studied the crystals that were exposed to pure vibration, positive vibration, perfectly symmetrical, perfect, beautiful shapes. The water that was exposed to negative energies, all distorted. Horrible crystals. So this was fascinating because it proves that on an atomic level, things are affected by vibration. Everything is vibrating. The whole material world is based on sound. This marble floor looks solid to you, right? You feel it? Knock on the floor. It's solid, right? Right? It's not. If you look at it on an atomic level, it's a whole bunch of atoms and neutrons and light, whatever, and they're spinning around and moving, and there's space between them. There's actually space between these things. Everything is moving constantly. How is that solid? It's like constantly moving. And so everything is based on sound. Everything is based on vibration. So the transcendental holy name is a vibration, Goloka Premadana Harinam Sankirtan, coming from Goloka. It is not an ordinary sound. We should have that much faith. That when you chant the holy name purely, it's actually coming from, just like the Ganges is coming from the spiritual world, right? Flowing into the material world. Coming from a higher source. The spiritual sound of the holy name, the holy name is coming from a spiritual source. It's not a mundane sound. And it can transform. It can transform our consciousness, it can transform our bodies. That's why sometimes we say, if a devotee has been chanting Hare Krishna for many years, his body is actually transformed over those years. The atoms in his body have been transformed. The cells from the prasadam that he's eating, transformed. So when you associate with a pure devotee, there's actually, you're getting that vibration, the whole body is vibrating on another level. And that's affecting you. You're affecting your consciousness. So this idea of giving people mercy is so important. In order to get mercy, we have to give mercy. We have to realize how fortunate we are and give that mercy out. Never underestimate how lucky we are. Very, very important. So one example, I want to tell you a funny story. Or wrap up. You may remember this, I'm not sure. Of giving mercy. And it's sort of related. It's related to this, the earlier verse about how the forest is dry and Krishna's like the rain cloud and he's, you know, like this, giving mercy. So in Sydney in the 80s, right, it happens every year, but there's an event called the City to Surf Fun Run. City to Surf. So it's people race from the city to the beach, right? At least 100,000 people participate. All the highways are blocked off, and just thousands of people running down. You've seen this, right? You're there? Running down the highway to the beach. It's like 13 kilometers, and it's a hot day, right? It's pretty hard. People dress up, but it's a fun event. People dress up in costumes. Some people go in wheelchairs and they dress up in all sorts of things, gorilla outfits. But there's a lot of people that participate for the physical exercise. They race. It's actually really a race, but most people it's fun. So in the beginning days, the devotees were thinking, how can we, you know, get involved in this? And so they thought, let's do Harinam. So they began doing Harinam on the center of the highway, at a big center strip of the highway, and they're doing the Harinam, so everyone's getting the mercy. Then they thought, let's add to that, let's distribute some prasadam. So what could we give? It's a hot day, people are running. What about oranges? Right? Everyone likes oranges. Anyone plays soccer or football, right? You remember halfway you get the oranges, right? Great, you love them. It's like an ecstasy. Wow, it's freezing cold. So we would get, Pratapana, I think, was the main inspiration behind it. Actually, I think he came up with the idea. So we got, we bought something like 20,000 oranges, right? 20,000 sweet, beautiful, juicy oranges. We took them into the temple room the night before. We chopped them up into quarters, offered them to the Radha Gopinath, the Radha Gokulananda, put them in the freezer overnight. Ended up being like, whatever, 60, 70,000 pieces of orange. And then we loaded them on the trucks. So in the early days, we weren't invited to this event, right? So we thought, okay, we're going to have to like hijack this event. So we parked the trucks down near the finish line, and there's devotees there waiting. I was one of the devotees, and I'd be like waiting for the people to come close to the finish line. And as soon as I'd give them the go-ahead, all the devotees who were waiting on the side here immediately opened the back of the truck, grabbed boxes, like 20, about 15 or 20 devotees, grabbed boxes and raced down to the finish line and began just handing them out, hand out the oranges to all the people. And people are coming up and just taking handfuls of oranges and just in complete ecstasy. It's like the perfect thing you could give them at that time. They're like so hot and they're tired, and you give them freezing cold oranges, and it's like devotees give them with a big smile and ecstasy. It's all prasadam, you know, we're really enthusiastic. People were crying in happiness. They were so happy to receive, you know, you guys are fantastic. They loved us. It was amazing. So in the beginning, we did this. We just completely hijacked the end of the race. And of course, there was a sports drink. What's that salty drink that they sell here? Huh? Gatorade. There was like a Gatorade company. And they had their cups lined up at the finish line too. But people wouldn't even touch that. They were just taking our oranges, right? So they became really upset. So we did that for 2 years, and in the end, the newspaper who was running this event, they called us in. They says, "Hey, look, you guys are enthusiastic. We admit it, and believe it or not, people like you, right? That's like you, even though you weren't invited, people were getting got a lot of response from you know what you did." And we would always clean up after we gave the oranges out. People would drop them. We cleaned up everything. We did things very, very nicely. So they says, "Why don't you guys become officials? We'll make you officials to the event. How about that?" I said, "Yeah, sure, no problem." So they gave us aprons, right? Official jackets, caps. And the third year, we're at the finishing line. We had our own stand, caps, jackets, tilak, dhoti, kurta, the whole thing. We're there as officials, walking around, everybody, chest out, like feeling really proud. You know, we're part of the scene. We're part of the, you know, it was so amazing. And we continued to give oranges out, and then we went a step further. We would take maha garlands from the deities and give it to the winner as they come into the finish line. And so that the cameras would actually take photos of us putting garlands on the winner. My sister would do it for the woman and I would do it for the man. And so we're like, you know, the newspapers there were putting garlands on the winner. It was a fantastic event and people just loved it. So this is an example of how you can very strategically perform sankirtan in a way which is social, very socially accepted. Well, we're distributing prasadam, we're doing the Harinam. Harinam was still going on, and people felt that we were part of their community event. They didn't think that we were like hijacking. They felt like you're actually complimenting, you're contributing positively to what we're doing here. So they loved it. So it was a funny story. So somehow or other that stopped, but we did it for many years. It was very successful. So if anyone have any questions or comments? Yeah.
Yeah, what's a good way to explain prasadam to someone who has never heard of it?
You could say, depending on their background, if they're a religious person, you could say that in every tradition, there is this concept of sanctified food, of blessed food. Every single religious tradition has some aspect of how food is holy, how it's a gift from God. It's a part of a religious ritual. So the whole idea of food being a blessing from the earth, being a blessing from God, is pretty traditional in every religion. So if they have that background, then you could present it like that and say prasadam is what is a Hindu word, or you know, a Sanskrit word for mercy, the mercy of God, right? And in order to make any to make spiritual advancement, at the very least, we have to understand this point that we are dependent on the mercy of Mother Nature. Where there's a mother, there's a father. You know, we're dependent on the earth, we're dependent on the sun, or we're dependent on so many things. So much mercy, so much benefit is coming to us. We're dependent on so many things. So the Vaishnavas, we take that a step further. We not only understand the good fortune that we've been given, but we then offer that food, understanding the source, where it's coming from, and offer that food back to the source. Most people can relate to it. In fact, right now I'm finding that people are very, very open to this idea of consciousness being transformed through food. And the whole idea of eating pure food and, you know, raising consciousness. People are very interested in this. It's a really easy thing to preach about. And it's a great way to introduce other aspects of Krishna consciousness. Yes. Well, it was not even mentioned, I don't think, even in Prabhupada's time. I call myself a Krishnadarian. I'm not a vegan. Because I'll have milk if it's coming from Krishna's cows, but I don't have milk from commercial cows. Because it's very, very horrible what's happening in the world today. And when you buy commercial milk, you're supporting a very demonic industry. You know, all the dairy cows are killed. Cow normally would live for 20 years, but a dairy cow lives for 3 years. Because they're exploited, they're injected with hormones and so many things to increase their milk production. And if they have a calf, if it's a male calf, it doesn't see the light of day. It's kept in a pen for four months. It's fed a type of liquid which keeps their, it's like an iron deficient liquid. So it makes their meat go very white, right? Because iron makes the meat go red, right? And so after 4 months, they're killed. And if it's a female calf, it just goes into the dairy industry. It's a really horrible industry. The meat industry and the dairy industry are one industry. You should not see it as separate. They're both the same. They work together. The dairy industry feeds the meat industry. It cannot survive without the dairy industry. And the dairy industry can't survive without them, because these dairy cows, after 3 years, they're useless. So in order to make money, they have to kill them. It's a business decision. So ideally, we should only have milk from our farm, from our cows. And that's what Prabhupada wanted. He wanted that. I made a personal decision that I didn't want to support that, because I felt as long as we buy commercial milk, there'll never be a motivation for us to develop the farming communities that Prabhupada wanted. Like there's a saying in Bengali, like, why buy milk from the marketplace? What is it? Why keep a cow when you can get milk in the marketplace? I don't know what the context of that, but it's, you know, it's a popular saying. That's what's happening in a lot of temples in ISKCON. We've actually missed the plot. But that's a very, very important of our whole part of our culture. So, and another point is that some devotees are lactose intolerant. So they actually can't even digest milk. And this argument that some people say that, oh, you know, you need milk to become Krishna conscious, it's not true. That's not true. You do not need, you need bhakti to become Krishna conscious. You need devotional service. Milk is not a prerequisite for becoming Krishna conscious. When Prabhupada talks about how the milk nourishes the finer brain tissues, he's talking specifically about the subtle aspect of that milk. When that milk is coming from a cow that is loved, that milk is coming in a way that it's given with love, it's full of positive vibration. The milk is pure, it's free from hormones and pesticides and so many other things. That milk has a subtle vibration that can nourish the brain and the body very, very, on a very subtle level. Right? Just like I talked about how water can be transformed, you know, this vibration affects food. In the same way, when you drink milk from a cow that is unhappy and, you know, it's exploited and it's giving it, it's not even giving it, it's extracted from it. That milk doesn't have the same subtle, loving nature that pure milk does, the milk that is glorified in the Vedas. Completely different milk. And you, as a mother, you know that the milk that you give the child is specific, is perfect for the child. And in fact, the mother's milk changes, can even change during the milking. If the mother actually picks up some need for the child, the milk, actually the contents of the milk, can change while feeding the baby. Because there's another aspect there, and it's the transfusion of love. There's like a subtle connection there. I remember milking the cows in Ugokul, and we're milking the cows, and as we're milking the cows by hand, no automatic thing, by hand, the cow would turn around and lick us on the head. And you try and tell me that that cow's not happy? That cow was looking at us as if we were her children. Like, oh, thank you, my child, have the milk. Very nice. That milk is pure. That milk can nourish the soul, that milk can make you enlivened, that milk is healthy for your body. You see? So I call myself a Krishnadarian, not a vegan. Yeah? Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know actually. I think it should be, and it should be updated. I'm going to be seeing Mukunda Maharaj in a few days, so I'll ask him about that. But it probably needs to be updated.
A lot of people on the streets are interested in that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And they're also interested in, you know, eating healthier and stuff like that. So, do you have any plans on writing a book?
I have some plans to write a book. It's a matter of doing it. But you mentioned about the green movement. That's the hottest movement right now on the planet, the environmental movement. We absolutely have to connect with the environmental movement because they are like our allies. We need to see these organizations as our allies because they can help us to help fulfill, you know, to create that ideal that Prabhupada wanted. As I mentioned earlier in the class, Prabhupada wanted ISKCON to be based on a rural economy and live natural lifestyles. These environmental people are very in tune with this, and we can learn so much from them, and we can also contribute to them. They actually love us. I went to the biggest environmental conference in San Francisco 3 months ago, huge event, and I met with all the leaders of the environmental movement, and I told them about Food for Life. They were in ecstasy. Vegetarian food for life? This is fantastic. I went to all the magazines. Oh, we've got to write an article about you. It's like they're just totally into it. They loved it. They just ate it up. So we have, you know, we're actually very relevant in their eyes. We have a lot to offer. We have a lot of information, a lot to offer all of these organizations. And right now, the way the world is, we are more relevant now than we've ever been. Krishna consciousness, we're more relevant right now in terms of what we represent as a culture. But it's up to us now to practically execute, to practically live that culture. Because people are just ready to soak it up. Organic gardening, you know, yoga is big right now. Raising consciousness and eating pure food and vegetarianism. And it's all, they're just lapping it up. I wanted to talk about, you know, I guess it's too much. I wanted to talk about the nature of it's sort of related to your question about the dairy industry and how the animals and the planet are just being. I watched a documentary last night called Earthlings. Anyone seen that documentary, Earthlings? So if you look in the dictionary, Earthlings. So when I say Earthlings, what do you think about? You think human beings, right? Earthlings actually means any living entity on this planet. It doesn't just mean humans. So animals are also earthlings. Plants are earthlings. Bugs are earthlings, right? So every single resident of this planet has a right to live, has a right to the resources of this planet. But what we're seeing now is human beings are just totally exploiting the other living entities, particularly, you know, the forests and particularly the other, you know, animals. And it's beyond belief how bad it is. I mean, I don't know how much you are aware, but it's very, very gruesome. We have to realize how bad, how demonic, how much pain is being inflicted right now on the animals of this planet. Every day, just to give you an idea, every day 70 million chickens are killed around the world. Every day about 3 million cows are killed. Every day about something like I think it's 1.5 million pigs are killed. Every day. Thousands of animals every second just being slaughtered. Throats cut, beaten over the head. I mean, there's horrible, horrible massacre going on right now. That's something like 40 billion animals are killed every year around the world. 40 billion. There's only 6 billion human beings. But we're wiping out six times the population of the human race every single year. And that's just the land animals. I didn't even mention fish. If I mention fish, it's a whole other story. More. There's so much killing and pain and suffering going on. We have such a responsibility to transform consciousness, to give people the positive alternative. There's a lot of... And that's why there's so much disasters in the world, there's wars. I mean, when Prabhupada said one time, when the men go to war, it's because of them killing, you know, the country has been killing cows. The result is that young men have to die in the battlefield. People wonder, why is there a war? Well, it's because of George Bush. Not because of George Bush. It's because of people's sinful activity. George Bush is just an instrument. We focus on, we like to point, you know, point the finger, like, you know, oh, it's because of him. Not because of him at all. It's because of us, because of the population's activities. When you point the finger, three fingers point back at you, right? You know that one? You know that one? Anyway, so I wanted to mention that. Yeah.
So how do we counterbalance, because the same question was brought up about drinking milk. How do we come out and appreciate the stance for it? You know, that's in terms of our preaching, also in terms of our moral lives and so on. But then Prabhupada still put so much emphasis on drinking milk.
Yeah.
Knowing and informing you about the source and promise of the source and so forth. Yeah, he insisted that the devotees drink it and offer it to the deities and so on.
Right. Well, I mean, Prabhupada, you're talking back 30 years ago, right? You have to keep that in mind, the context. It's like 1975, 76, whatever. It's literally 30 years ago, right? Yeah. And Prabhupada was, you know, out of practicality. Okay, look, we don't have the developed farming communities now, so Krishna likes milk, we have to offer milk, so we buy milk from the marketplace. So it's being practical. So that's you know, that's a given. That's a given. That's Prabhupada wanted that, so we can do that. But at the same time, we have to always try to work towards the idea of what Prabhupada wanted is for us to, for the farms to provide milk to the temples. That's absolutely true. And so somehow we need to work towards it. We should not lose the plot. And that's how I feel sometimes around ISKCON, you see that people we're losing the plot, we're losing that connection. I'm not saying here necessarily, but generally that's the way it is. We're losing that aspect of our movement, which is a very important aspect of our movement. If you're going to buy milk, at least buy organic milk. Because organic milk is at least pure, at least less contaminated. Regular commercial milk is so heavily contaminated. Recently there was an article saying that mad cow disease can potentially be transferred through regular milk. There's like some scientific study they did that's saying that cows that are affected by mad cow disease, their blood, you know, the disease is in their blood, it can be transferred to milk. So, but if you drink organic milk, at least you're getting milk that's free from pesticides and hormones. And I mean, commercial milk is so bad. That's why you see these children now developing prematurely, particularly young girls. Right, the young girls are like 7 years old, they're developing breasts and on their menstrual cycle is ridiculous. Way, way ahead of their normal cycle. It's because they're eating so many, ingesting so many hormones through the foods that we eat. The commercial milk, the meat, which is so heavily contaminated with hormones. All of these different foods that are contaminated. So as much as possible we should eat pure food, organic food, and especially organic milk. And it's, I know it's more expensive, but somehow make an adjustment, cut down on something else so you can get better quality milk. I think Krishna would be so much happier if you gave him organic milk. And if you drop something else, you know, cut out the peanuts, cut out the cashews, cut out dates and figs, whatever, and just give him organic milk. He'd be in ecstasy. He'd be so much happier.
A lot of the milk that we offer to the deities here is organic.
Yeah.
A lot of, I think, the deities practically.
Yeah, it should be. It should be. Yeah, at least be organic. At least. We should offer Krishna the best. Krishna should get the best. And he will make a range. Remember, he's the husband of the goddess of fortune.
We have to be clear in our minds where we stand, like, on this issue.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I fully appreciate your stance, you know, with your position, you know, the movement, the preaching you're doing, and so forth. But I know for myself, I know that when I drink, because I only drink organic milk myself.
Right.
And I notice the difference completely. Like, I can't drink that stuff because it's like, it's like white bread.
Yes, it's disgusting.
No nutrition, you can feel that.
Right.
But at the same time, I know if I don't drink milk on a regular basis, you know, 2 or 3 times a week, so I notice, you know.
You need that.
You know, I need the.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so forth. So, but, you know, after listening to your lecture, I'm not trying to, you know, attack you on account of that, but I'm just saying that, you know, you're inspiring me not to drink milk. Which I think, because, you know, Prabhupada's emphasis was to drink milk.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, Prabhupada, you said drink milk. But as I said, some people are milk intolerant. That's the fact of life. There are Asian people, African Americans, they can't digest milk. So it's like, they actually get, it's harmful to them. So they have to get their protein and calcium from other sources. In fact, calcium, you know, people say, oh, I need calcium, so I have to drink milk. Where's the source of calcium? It's green plants. Cows get calcium from eating green plants. Right? And they transform it into milk, and then we drink milk. The source of calcium is from the soil. Green plants. So, I'm not saying you do not drink milk, but we should drink as pure milk as possible, ideally from our own cows. But keep in mind that some people cannot digest milk. And that's, a lot of devotees don't even realize that. They wonder why they got stomach cramps, they wonder why they, you know, lots of bloating and gas and stuff. It's because they can't digest milk properly. I've been having, you know, I haven't drank milk for like 8 years. Healthy. So, you know, for me it's fine, but it's an individual thing. So I don't advocate everyone to become, you know, a Krishnadarian. I mean, or a vegan, whatever. Okay, thank you very much. Hare Krishna.